Anyway, let's do Das Boot.
Das Boot.
Oh, don't.
Das Boot.
Das Boot. Dirty Lee. Oh, imagine Das Boot, the Bollywood film. Huh? Imagine trying to choreograph Bollywood films in a tiny submarine.
They could do it.
It would be much more epic. It would be more epic than this 4-hour cut. Anyway, let's begin properly. Hello, and I'm Richard Nicholas. With me to form the podcast is Abigail Bain.
Hello.
And Anthony Evans.
Guten Tag.
Oh, German, topical.
Yeah, and I know.
We don't have Jamie. He wouldn't watch the 4-hour version that none of us watched. We all watched the 2.5-hour version of the film we're going to discuss this week. And Jamie was like, oh, I can only get the 4-hour-something-minute one that the director made a long time. Like, you know,
it's I can like, only watch the obscure 4.5 director's cut.
And I don't have time. And it's like, we didn't have time. But we are here watching the... Anyway, the point is, it's just the three of us, and we're here to discuss Das Boot from... I don't know what year it was, because it's very hard to... It was during the war, is when it was set. But when did they make... Abby, could you give us the details so everyone knows which boot we're talking about?
Fucking hell, you're struggling to say, you know.
No! Shut up! This is always... I'm always like this. Just do your
Tis
job.
True.
Do your job.
Okay. Das Boot is from 1981. It was directed by Wolfgang Petersen, also written by him based on the novel by Lothar G. Bachheim. It stars Jürgen Prochnow, Herbert Grönemeyer, Klaus Vannemann, Hubertus Bengst, Martin Semmelrogge, Bernd Tauber, and Erwin Leder.
Best approximations on the German pronunciation there. Very good. Sorry if it was like fingers on a chalkboard, if you're Ackman, but you know.
I think probably not fingers on the chalkboard. Maybe just sort of like just the chalk squeaking just the once. Like, oh.
Probably more like the English police officer from Hello, Hello.
Yeah.
Just enough to probably have made a weird faux pas, made something sound a bit like bum.
Yeah, so, you know, culturally, we're British/Welsh, so our only link to the media of the war is via Hello, Hello. Like, we don't know anything about World War II apart from Hello, Hello. So that's how we understand German-British-French relations. This film, I picked it. Obviously, the English translation is The Boot, meaning the shoe. And it's about a man who makes... He's a cobbler, and... No, it's the boat, isn't it? The U-boat, like the underwater boat. See, I didn't know until we watched this film that the U in U-boat meant underwater. Are you guys mind blown or just embarrassed on my behalf?
Pass.
Well, anyway, the boat, Das Boot, is German. It's quite a quality war film. Like it's from the German's perspective, which is a different. Usually, all war films in Britain and America are like the Western, like, yay, we shot some Germans, those fucking Nazi cunts. The Nazis are proper villains, because, I mean, people should know about World War II. I won't fill you in on those details. But I wanted to see a war film from the Germans' perspective, and often it's done with the kind of, well, we have to have good Nazis so that people will watch the film and not boo the screen. But this one's a bit more neutral. It's a bit more just about German soldiers.
Yeah, they're just sort of jobbing soldiers. Like, some of them are old enough to sort of predate Nazism. So it's something that came in after they were already in the military.
They're not very We Love the Führer Nazis, so that gets them on side a little bit. But you have to have them be just the most, like, even like Valkyrie and what's that other one that's where it's like made by, like, there's lots of English actors playing Germans. It's like the Iron Cross as well. They have the good Nazis against the actual Nazis. So whenever you see a German war film, it's always, well, the ones we sympathise with are the Nazis who aren't that adamant on murdering Jews, you know?
Yeah.
But that's
I know what you mean. They have become just the kind of standard Hollywood kind of bad guys.
Yeah, they used a lot. And in fairness, they were genuine, horrible people. You know, Germans are nice, but the Nazi party, there's no defending them, is there? I mean, fuck.
It's quite hard, yes.
But, that said, I was like, let's do a war film. We haven't done that many on Spoiler Filled, so this is a good one. I recommended it to the team. They gave it a look. But what had they thought when I suggested it, Anthony?
Well, I didn't quite know what to expect, because on the first hand, being presented with this, it's a 2.5-hour German film set like in a claustrophobic submarine. So, like, the kind of stereotypical thing about German films is that they're all like really artsy and you can't understand them. So I didn't know if it was going to be that kind of film or something a bit more standard. And then also it's a submarine film, and that comes with its own kind of set of kind of cliches. And
well, the only submarines I can think of is like the Yellow Submarine with the Beatles, The Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou, and probably more representative, but still silly, Red October, which I think we did a while back.
I'm glad you named Red October, because while I was thinking that, I could only think of comedies that involved submarines. I couldn't think of any dramas.
Well, it's an action drama, that one. We've already talked about it before, so.
I think they were very popular at the actual time of the war, like making
propaganda, like, and stuff.
Yeah, propaganda, Hollywood, submarine things. I've seen a lot of them on TV, like during the day on BBC Two, something like that. Like, my dad used to watch films a lot, and he's very up on the kind of like war films and submarine films. Yeah. So, like, I've seen a lot just kind of through him, so I'm quite kind of savvy on all the kind of cliched and
there'll
stuff.
There'll be some blips, there'll be some tension, there'll be some small spaces to sleep in.
Yes, there'll be cramped people sweating a lot.
Yeah.
And certain, like, key phrases, like ping and up periscope and stuff like that.
I don't think they say ping.
A lot of action happening off screen, and like a lot of the tension just in people's faces, if you know what I mean.
Well, a lot of this is that. So
that's true. It's very atypical submarine film, but like just being from the perspective of the Germans just changes pretty much like everything.
Yeah. So you hadn't seen it, so it was fresh to you, at least?
I hadn't seen it. I've heard about it. Like, it's, you know, it's a fairly famous film, and it's always heralded as really good. And I know you guys have seen it before, and that you liked it a lot. So I was hopeful.
I think the first time I watched it is because I heard of it as like a... It was like a joke in a, like a sitcom, like Felix Knights or something, where they had like a pinball machine themed on Das Boot. I can't remember what sitcom it was in, but that was the first time I heard of it. So that's kind of a weird reason to have bothered watching it. Yeah. But I don't know. Abby, what's your knowledge of Das Boot and or, like, what were you expecting, I guess, isn't it, you know?
Well, it was in the book that we have of, like, insert number here, films you need to see before you die.
Because what happens when you're dead is St. Peter, or whichever deity you believe in, the person who does the admin for whichever deity, they go, ahem, have you seen 501 films on this list? If not, we're sending you back down to Earth. That's what life was about, watching films.
So I expected it to be of a certain quality, but also there's that sort of double-edged thing with these lists where it's like, is it on here because it's worthy? Is it on here because it's got a weird thing about it?
Sometimes the story behind the scenes is better than the film. Like, if you're a clever film knowy person, which we're not particularly, we just watch them, and I've watched a lot. But if you know about the behind the scenes director drama, sometimes they're like that makes the film good, and they you know they're not really good on their own merits. So that's a factor.
Hmm.
Go on.
When I first watched it, I had sort of moderated expectations. So high-ish, but I knew there's going to be a reason you made it into this book. Is it because you're worthy?
Hmm. Okay, that's good. That's good. Have you seen much German film? I mean, I haven't seen that many. I've seen Downfall, which is another good film about the Nazis by Germans, I think.
That's the only German quality films we watch.
I haven't seen that many German films. Have you seen? Are you knowledgeable in German cinema or?
Not particularly.
Of this era.
I don't think of any era, to be honest. I mean, they don't...
Because early German, like, we did Weimar cinema and stuff like that.
Oh, of course, yeah.
But that's, like, way earlier than this. To be honest, I was more familiar with Jürgen Posch now.
Speaking of earlier in cinema history, I might have seen a few Dada films which had Germans in or starring them. You can't really judge the German cinema on a few surreal films about floating hats. Necessarily from the 30s, they were just let's not get into it. Right, so Das Boot. I mean, you know, we'll find out if we genuinely loved it. I mean, Anthony kind of said me and Abby liked it a lot, so spoilers, we liked it a lot.
Sorry,
but that, you know, that's not the discussion. Is about what happens, and what happens is lots of partying and vomiting, and oh my god, some of the best like. Darting in and out of between patrons at a club. Like, it basically starts with a party with all the, like, Navy men. And that's not men who wear Navy. That's people in boat costumes. fucking hell, Rich.
Boat costumes?
Yeah, they're in boat, dressed up as boats. You know, soldiers who are in the Navy, not people wearing...
Sailors.
All of the sailors who are going to be going on missions in the German U-boats, having a rip-roaring party in a club, drinking, fighting, singing, molesting, vomiting.
Yeah, she's not a stripper, is she? She's
singer.
Burlesque a bit, I think.
Yeah, a lone singer is doing a good job singing to all these drunken, rowdy men.
Were you going to say bastards?
No.
Are you sure?
No.
But yeah, the cinematography on that bit alone was fantastic. Was it one shot? It felt like one shot.
No, I don't think it was one. But it was like we weaved between the revelers, and we get a glimpse into the main characters that we don't know who's going to be what, but we get to see some of the characters getting drunk and trying to, you know, cut a rug or two. We get like a sense of the captain's a bit more stoic and at the bar, and like it sets up the captain, and there's like a young, strict Nazi guy who's a bit naive, but is like behaving like this is a rabble rowdy bunch of cunts and they should be disciplined. So it establishes another captain of another sub as an absolute off his tits drunk who perhaps doesn't like Hitler and may give a drunken speech and get in trouble. You know, we get lots of little scenes play out to set up a lot of characters. I thought it was a really, really great opener of these drunken sailors.
Yeah, it was. Like, I don't think the whole scene was like in one long shot, but there was definitely in the middle of it a continuous shot which kind of weaved between the people and then back into like the toilet where someone is like throwing up and then back into the room, and that was really kind of dynamic and very well done. And kind of a little bit kind of sets you up later on for some of the kind of special kind of camera work that they actually have going on inside the submarine.
Yeah.
And that's another thing as well. They relished in having space at the beginning.
Yeah.
Because they knew it was going to be so compressed.
It's the breath of oxygen before we go underwater for the rest of the film, really, isn't it? No. Good.
Yes.
So I didn't realise you needed hand-holding there. It went, yes, Richard, you're right.
Oh, you might disagree. Fuck. It's not not a given that you agree with me. But, like, Anthony is correct. One of the other parts that's really interesting, dynamic camera work in it, is when you're confined to this submarine, which is a lot of the film, they find a way to weave through the small doorways and between the men, so that you kind of think, well, the cameraman can't even exist if he's getting in these spaces. And like, they often go through the whole sub, through all of the like hanging baskets of bread, the men talking or doing their work, navigating, and you know, like it finds a path in a really interesting way, and it's just really like groundbreakingly clever with a really constricted set, really, isn't it?
Yeah, it's kind of one of those films where it really kind of makes you think about how they filmed it, if you know what I mean. Hmm. Like, did they have an actual submarine? Did they have like a big thing on like hydraulics that they could like throw water in? And then certainly the camera work, because there's a lot of like continuous shots going throughout from like the from the back to the front of the sub, and like how did they manage to do this in like the early 80s?
Yeah, from what I understand, they built a fairly accurate replica of the inside of an actual submarine. And obviously, for some of the war, I mean, it's all practical, obviously, but so I think, presume models were used for some of the distance sea things, like when they attack ships, they have to use models and stuff on in like tanks of water. So that doesn't quite get as silly as the Thunderbirds, but you can tell that it's not real and not CGI. I mean, it's obviously not CGI, but... You know, but mostly it's just practical accuracy, good set design, and a bit of clever ingenuity with acting and directing, really, isn't it?
They didn't pull any punches as well. In like, what the bit I'm thinking of is when they were up the top of the submarine, when they were standing on the deck, and they were just getting pelted with water constantly. Yeah. It's like that was just happening, and they just had to put up with that.
Another thing is just kind of you're also aware of how much the actors must have been going through as well. Like, it kind of emulates what the characters would have been going through, and it kind of adds another element to the film as well.
Yeah, because, you know, it's not much of a spoiler to say this film, sweaty, hairy German men with bloodshot eyes together, packed in like sardines. For ages, and the whole first chunk of the film is nothing's happening. Like, there's no drama, there's no war, there's no meeting other ships, it's just nothing's going on. It's like, do the bit when you play battleships, it's when your opponent's missing by miles and you're just sitting there going, it's not exciting, is it? Like, so they do a lot with nothing, and the first bit is establishing character types, isn't it? It's like, we get a sense of the captain. And the respect that he has from his men. We have another key character is there's a journalist going on this boat mission, because it's essentially about one long mission for like the German U-boat, like a normal during the war mission underwater, faffing about, waiting for the right thing to happen. And a journalist goes with them to document it, a sort of journalistic propaganda. But he's a sort of fresh-faced young man who's looking forward to writing this thing. And as he goes on, he experiences it in a much realer way than perhaps he was anticipating, isn't it?
Yes, his name was Werner?
Yes.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's Werner for the rest of the podcast, guys.
What's the captain's name?
I don't know.
So, I'll read it. Captain Lieutenant Heinrich Lehmann Willenbrock der Alte.
So, Captain. The Captain and Werner are two of our main characters, but we have a plethora of other people. Does someone want to have a go at selecting some of the standout characters that we have in this story?
Johan.
Johan.
Give a bit of a description of his character and look. Well, they all have bloody beards.
He works in the engine room, and he looks like he's been stuck in an engine room for his entire life.
Yes.
He's just pale and dirty and skinny, and he's got these huge mad eyes.
He looks like Shaggy from Scooby-Doo, but with a beard and bloodshot googly eyes.
Yeah, well,
actually, he'd have bloodshot eyes because he was a stoner in the air. Yeah, exactly. He would look like that. Yeah, so we got him in the engine room. He's got some interesting story arcs going on.
The other kind of main one I can think of is the chief engineer, who pretty much just becomes the biggest pile of stress throughout the film.
Everyone will die unless he fixes pretty much everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, all your sympathy, Paul. Like, he's the hardest working, most downtrodden character because he's like experienced like submariner, and he gets an opportunity. Like, there's a good bit where he's has an opportunity to leave the war for a bit. Like, he's supposedly going to be dropped off and go on a holiday for a bit. And then he gets deprived that, and then he has to save the day and work so hard and ends up, like, sleeping, vibrating on an engine after he's done his job. But it's, like, a really good character moment that he gets. So he stands out, obviously. Then we got, like, a couple of side people. Like, there's a quite jovial ginger guy who's I thought was quite interesting, and there's, like, the prim and proper kind of Hitler Youth guy who's a bit... He's always shaving every day. He's the only one who consistently shaves and wears his uniform very smart, and everyone else is just like, look, Hitler's not going to be walking in anytime soon on this hundreds of miles under the sea. We're not going to be joined by top brass. I think we can wear crappy fisherman jumpers and grow our beards. But this guy's like, no, I do everything by the letter and feel a bit out of place because everyone else is so much more casual than I am. You know, so he stands out.
Yeah, oh, and small props as well to the radar operator.
Oh, he's good. Yeah, go on.
He didn't have a lot to say, but he did a lot with his face.
He just gets to say what numbers and what's happening. But yeah, he has to sweat and be the first. Like, everyone looks at him and he's like, oh, I've got to tell you the information. And you're not going to like it. Or you are going to, you know, like, he's key to the drama for all the other characters sometimes.
Was he the same guy who was kind of pondering over a map for a long time before telling them, like, no, we can't do it?
I just don't know. I think that...
No, that was the captain.
No, and there was another guy looking as well. No, yeah, the captain. Oh, okay. Yeah, the captain uses his special Submariner rulers to tell if they can join the convoy, because it could have been like the film Convoy, and we could have had a cool music montage where submarines are like honking their horns and going down the English Channel fighting the British. But we avoided that. That was the first bit. Was like, are we going to go to war? No. And then it was, we're going to war. Yay! Oh, fuck, it's really horrible being bombed. It's like, there's a moment where they actually get to shoot some battleships, and they torpedo them, and they're like, yay, we got them. Oh, but of course the rest of the British Navy are now shooting at us with their bombs. Dive, dive, dive. Oh, God. It turns out being bombed underwater involves a lot of shaking about and being frightened, and various bolts pinging out and nearly killing you. So
that's because they had to submerge further than they ever had before.
Good tension for that bit, actually, because they have a test first, don't they, where they're like going down and they say, "Oh God, we're in the red bit of the arrow," and then later on they have to go beyond the red bit, and it's like,
like, what I liked about that is his relationship with the people that were bombing him as well. He always really respected them.
But still thought they were bastards because they could potentially kill him at any time.
It was antagonistic, but also just like giving him a little bit of respect every time.
Yeah, I think that's because it wasn't overly patriotic and it wasn't overly wrong. Like it didn't feel like they were... And it didn't feel like they were assholes rebelling against being German and Nazis, but they, you know, it was one step above war games. It was pride and this is our jobs, we're going to do it well, we want our boys to win, but we don't really care for all that, like, fascism back home. It doesn't matter to us, we're just...
I think that's a lot due to the fact that the actual kind of... antagonist is the kind of the Nazis kind of back home giving them like really bad orders and
yes,
like
expecting...
making it seem like all the higher ups back in Germany are just kind of incompetent or
treating
willing
them
to
like
send
pawns.
Yeah
yes, it's an interesting moral dilemma, isn't it, because these are, you know, these are professional soldiers and they are doing a hard job. And it's not about whether what they think politically. It's about how will they survive and how will they do their job as best they can. There is a good sense of they have some good scenes where they like meet some of these higher ups, or like they've been through a lot of old shit, and they're invited up on a boat in Spain or something, aren't they? That has German officers on, and they have like this massive banquet for them, like just bananas. Christ, you can't get them during the war, you know. And there's all these sad hangdog expressions on these worn out men, and then they're just sent back into the bullshit again without much of a... Like, no one's getting out of it. They're just fueling up and have to go through a terrible mission, isn't it? Yeah,
essentially given a suicide mission.
Yeah. Go through a scary bit with lots of other foreign soldiers in boats.
The Gibraltar Strait, wasn't it?
Yeah, and I mean, there's lots of moments where they tackle this idea of the higher-ups don't care about us, but what can you do? That's how the army works. We just have to grit our teeth and be determined. And there's a slight air of delusionalness. They're kind of, yes, we can do it. We have to tell ourselves we could do it, you know?
Mm. And, like, it works on kind of both sides of the war then. Like, you can apply that to pretty much... That kind of sentiment to pretty much any kind of side of the war.
Yeah, Churchill the higher and Monty ups... can fuck over the English soldiers and stuff just as easily as Hitler and the Goebbels and... Well, not Goebbels, but, you know, Hermann... All the famous ones can fuck you over. All the germs can people. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I suppose we're kind of... They are just the underdogs. So that's kind of why we're rooting for them kind of mainly.
Going against our patriotic instincts and going, yeah, come on, guys, live, even though if you succeed, you'll be killing our side. It's okay, you're all actors, we sympathise with your plight. And I think that's one of the plus points. Is it's just saying, look, war is horrible for people, and it doesn't matter what side you're on.
Doesn't make sense. Yeah. And no one knows what's going on pretty much all the time.
And so I think it succeeds in quite a nice liberal take on the war instead of the kind of propaganda patriotic. Come on, you know, you can't do that for an audience outside of Germany. And even Germans probably don't feel that good about. They probably have pride in the German army, but it's a bit awkward.
Well, I read that it was the Germans who kind of had more of a problem with this film because they were kind of uneasy about the Nazis being kind of sympathetic characters.
Yeah, it's tricky.
And that's kind of odd, even coming from the German society.
You've got to tread carefully because, you know, you don't want to upset the rest of the world because, you know...
Mm-hmm. But, like, at the end of the day, of course there would have been, you know, good people on both sides of the war, and they deserve, you know, they deserve to be kind of recognised too.
Yeah. Abby, what did you make of some of the bigger themes of it before we maybe tackle some of the little moments we like?
I'm trying to remember the word. It might be nihilism, but I think I should check. Bear with me while I Google a moment.
And do a silly vice.
Yeah. The rejection of all religious and moral principles in the belief that life is meaningless. There's that element to it as well, where it's sort of like they went through all that and then they still died. So it's just like, everything's a piece of shit, isn't there?
Yeah, that's the disgusting, horrible war icing on the cake is after we sweat and live, it's a really engaging film. But you spend this journey with these U-boat men, and you know, it's long, and you sweat, and it's tense, and you feel a little bit worn out watching it, or you should do if it's done its job. And then they finally get back to, like, base, a safe dock, and that gets bombed by aeroplanes. And a lot of the cast we've just seen barely survive by, like, scraping together whatever wires and like they basically somehow plumb up the ship by turning bolts and wiring things. Like, I don't think I ever got to understand how submarines work. It seems they get flooded when they're bombed, and if you turn enough pipes, the water can be bucketed out of there somehow, and they can shoot air out or something, and they can kickstart it with like a mini metro outside and plug it in. I don't know.
Well, one of the things that the chief had to do during his epic run of fixing everything was to go into the engine, which was leaking battery acid, to remove some of the parts, shift some of the other bits so that they could basically work with half a battery. So there was a lot of that going on where it's like, we've got half of this. We'll work with half of it.
Get in the tiny gap full of battery acid on your skateboard, slide up the thing, and we'll empty the other bit of the submarine of water and do underwater engineering. And then we may or may not leave the bottom of the sea where we're stuck, is one of the, like... It is just a really dramatic, tense bit. And they get through that, as well as other scenes of peril, and bang, 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 we're all dead on the docks. Like, fuck, end. Fuck you guys. War kills people.
Yeah, I suppose, you know, it kind of needed that ending, because, you know, it did give us the joyous kind of... One of the most brilliant kind of ways I've seen it done in film is when they finally manage to kind of surface, and then you have the captain kind of, like, come out, like, screaming and laughing and charge forward. That kind of moment is one of, like, the best of filmic dramatic tension breakers climaxes that I've ever seen. And because of that, because it's not a Hollywood kind of film, and that is probably, like, one of the most kind of Hollywood moments in the film, it needed that at the end to kind of remind you that, you know, guys, yes, that was a brilliant moment, but war is horrible, everyone just dies.
You can survive all of the battles but one, and you still die. Like, you know, you just take that one bad, wrong place at the wrong time, and you're dead in a war. Doesn't matter how good you are or how fortunate you are. If your luck turns bad, you get killed, and that's it. You can't choose. It's just literally random. What I liked as a precursor to them, a lot of them dying on the docks at the end, we see them arrive back and they're all standing on the U-boat and they're getting like a parade and a band playing and a welcome from the local Germans or whatever. And they're all effed. Their clothes are worn, their beards, they're all just, I'm barely alive. We've been through some bullshit. And then all the people on the docks are smartly dressed and like not affected by the it all. And it's just that contrast, and it's just sad and but like hopeful, and then it takes a turn. So I like that contrast of them just dead on their feet, but just surviving. You know, like it adds to the contrast at the end all the more, just to have it. Nah, bad times. You know.
Yeah, especially like from the very first scene as well, where they're all kind of drunk and reveling and really happy.
Yeah. Well, they're sort of. They're drunk, but not happy to go to war. They're kind of drunk because they're going to war, I think. It's about having that last night.
Yeah, that's true. I think there is something said about like the youngest members not knowing what they're in for and stuff like that. You're probably right.
I'm not sure. It might have been in the longer version that I watched at some point, but because they got the journalist on the boat and he's taking pictures early, and I think it might not have been in the version we watched, but he's taking pictures of them as they first get on the submarine, and they're all fresh-faced young men. I think someone says to him, like, don't take pictures now. Wait till they've grown their beards and actually look a bit older and more. Like, because this, you're going to make people feel sad to see young men going to their death. Like, it kind of, he has to have it be explained to him, like, fresh-faced U-boatsmen aren't a thing. one week in a sub, and you do not look like a young boy on a deck of a boat. You look like a shambling bag of scraps, or more manly, or whatever, you know. Like, so, they make a point of the learning curve for the journalist as he finds out that A, it's boring a lot of the time, and B, it's harrowing, and C, it's there is fun and a king. Like, it's slightly about the bond you build with people in a confined space, because, you know, it's like a busy Big Brother house corridor, isn't it? Yeah. Or something. Maybe not. But it's about, you know, lads at sea a little bit, and how they get on and listen to Tipperary and sing that.
Yeah, exactly. Like, so little of their time is actually kind of fighting. It's mainly just kind of waiting for something to happen.
And also,
which is kind of, it's not very cinematic a thing to have to show, because it's kind of boring, but like that is their life.
It seems like it's not, I don't really find it boring, I find it interesting.
Oh no, they did it well, like, but like compared to kind of like the really kind of tense scenes, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. I mean, do you have any thoughts on the kind of the bonds built between the various characters?
Not so much the bonds of specific ones. But there was just something about the way they all slept on top of each other on the floor. Where it's
particularly
just like,
after
you,
the
you,
hard times, yeah.
Yeah, and it's like you can't get closer to another person than this, literally and emotionally.
Mm.
You just that is a unique experience, is
dirty,
what they're doing.
Dead bumblebees, all sleeping because they've finally stopped drowning, like, or running out of air or whatever. You're right, and also, we learn that in this, if the film is to be believed, you don't have a bed each. When one of you is on your shift, someone else sleeps in your bed, and then you go and sleep in their filth and rotate like it's the 1900s in a poor family. Like, that's how a U-boat works. Everyone sleeps in the bed, you share it, tough tits, it ain't getting cleaned.
Yeah.
It also has a lot of food stashed away in it somewhere.
Oh, yeah, it seemed like the food was just kind of packed into any kind of closet they could find.
Yeah.
But yeah, what I was going to say was, like I've seen a lot of submarine stuff, and this is the film that kind of really kind of hits home that wow, these are just men in a big metal tank underwater. They could barely see anything, and it just really kind of hits home how hard this life was could have been.
I mean, I couldn't stomach it if there wasn't hard work to do. Like, it's just farts and BO and in each other's face. And I would get a bit sick of hearing Tipperary, no matter how ironic it is that Germans are singing an English song. But like,
yeah. The thing that got me was how there's only one instance where they use the periscope,
yeah.
But it's so bad, like they could barely see anything.
Yeah,
the water splashing up against it.
Yeah, and I didn't realise that the only way they could, even in a submarine, the only way they can actually see anything is to surface and be on top looking.
Yeah, there's something you could do with radar, but you can't do much without looking. And part of the story was, like, they saw these massive battleships either coming at them or in the distance, and they got spotted because their periscope was up, and that they got bombarded with bombs at one point. Because of that, and it's like that's how tricky it is to actually succeed in these things, your mission. And we do have quite a good scene where they sort of get to the surface, they spot a convoy of battleships, and they take one down. And there's another moment where they kind of highlight the sadness of war, and it's they bomb a ship, they sink, they hit it, and there's a good bit of tension where they all look at each other, where they wait for the noise of a bomb hitting. So we don't see it, but we hear it, and everyone reacts, and they're pleased. Then they're attacked, and they have to like dive underwater and avoid bombs, and they barely make it through. And they come up a lot later, and they finish it off, and they didn't realise that no one had rescued the people on the burning ship, so they end up killing a load of... Like, they feel sorry, because they just killed a bunch of men who could have been rescued by their allies, and they just kind of look at each other like, oh. I mean, we're happy to kill them while they're aboard at war, but once they're a sinking ship, we don't want to kill them anymore. You know, it's kind of weird.
But that's the thing. It's the ship that's the target, not the men.
Yeah, and they know they're going to kill people, but they don't want to brutally murder every single one. You know.
Yeah, exactly. They, you know, we've seen them go through all this stuff themselves, so, you know, they obviously have an understanding of the people on the ship as well. So it makes sense that it would kind of hit them emotionally as it does.
And it's a nice visual change-up, because we're so often under the sea. Under the sea. Bah, bah, yeah. It's nice to, because they surface occasionally, and everyone's like, "Fuck yeah, let's get splashed in the face by water. It's so much better than sniffing our own butts all the time." So they always love being up in the spray, being splashed by waves. I'm sure the actors would.
Except for that one guy who nearly died.
He was happy to be up there, but they did have a good scene where he gets clanged into some railings and is, yeah, like you say, nearly died, Abby. The journalist loves being up there. He's like, "Yeah, put my hat on, get up in the waves. Look, Captain, water and stuff." Loves it. But the battle scene, they're up there, and it's like water, but a fire on the water. There's some nice silhouetting going on as well. And like, I think the idea of an inferno at sea really strikes the image of death at home. Like, it's really brutal. And, you know, this doing it with models, fair play to them. It's very emotionally... It works, I think, anyway. Fuck. What a film. Let's find some bad points, or some more good points that we haven't mentioned. If you want... I mean, if you want to be generous. Anyone?
It did become apparent after a little bit that they couldn't be too specific about the repairs they were making because it would have wasted time.
Yeah.
But you did get this general sense of, you're fixing things just by turning some valves and some tanks.
It did get a little bit Star Trek Next Generation, where it's just... Something is wrong with this spaceship. Do this. It doesn't make any sense, but you know that it's doing something.
Their emotional reaction to what's said rather than what they actually do.
Mm. I don't know if I can find anything really to fault.
That's being a dick, really, because what are they supposed to do? Explain in tedious detail how ships work for the audience of people who don't care, you know, like,
yeah.
I mean, maybe, yeah, I don't know.
It was a moment, though, that I really enjoyed where I understand the mechanics of something, and it was when they were getting those torpedoes into the tubes, and they turned the little wheel, and that runs the missile along the track to get it into the tube, and they go alongside the torpedo as it's going, so it looks really funny, but you also understand what they're doing. So I was like, I know what you're doing, I understand what you're doing. I finally understand what you're doing.
There must be a vague thrill from the accuracy as well. I mean, there are probably... history buffs who cringe at the mistakes, but it's a fairly reasonable portrayal of this stuff. It's not trying to be the Hollywood myth of what happened. It's trying to recreate life and the workings of this thing. So I found it interesting to find out things about how such a strange, like, because, you know, it's, you don't often find out how these things genuinely work. You just get the principle of it. So I found it fascinating, and I think that's one of the things that is cool about it, is seeing that torpedo.
Yeah, the one thing we're suffering from this year, and it's not just because it's in German, it's they didn't do a particularly good job of telling you who people were.
But they're all kind of characters you get. You get, they have a thing about them. Like the young guy who's writing a stack of letters to his fiancée, who everyone's like, oh, look at her, pictures of women, you know, they make fun of him, but it's like that. We get little snapshots of people, isn't it? But, I mean, there's quite a few men. They all run about and dive through the little holes in that cool way that looks good, but would bring you back in.
I love that. Just every time they came with those feet first, I was like, oh, I want to do that so much.
Every time I saw it, I was like, one slip and you crack your head open.
Yeah.
Honestly, you're such an old woman. What's wrong with you?
I'm an old woman. What? Prejudice. Yeah, but like they have characters that you don't need to know who exactly they are or whatever. It's like, you know, like your man who was the engineer guy, he got in trouble because he freaked out when they were being bombed and all the bolts were flying off and the pressure. No, it wasn't that. It was going underwater and he freaked out and he was scared. And he gets like a row and it's like, please don't court-martial me. And the guy doesn't say, the captain doesn't say he won't court-martial him, but he kind of infers, ah, that's right, fella. Like, and so he then makes up for it by being particularly heroic and really working his ass off to get the bits and
the
bobs.
The engines back online.
Yeah, exactly. And stopping the ship from sinking. And so they have plenty of character development, even if you don't know quite who everyone is. So I don't think that's a fault, really, is it?
I know, I've plus it straw there.
I know.
It's just amazing.
The only thing I can bring up is the original author of the book kind of had some qualms with the film about it not being realistic enough.
I read that.
Like really kind of minor points about specifically kind of like character moments and emotional moments, dramatic moments on the submarine, and like, he had an issue with it not being realistic enough and being too cinematic.
Like the soldiers weren't disciplined enough. They wouldn't throw an oily rag, and they'd be like, they'd be like proper soldiers. They wouldn't have any of this dicking around emotions. It's like,
yeah, grow up, but it's like it's a film.
Yeah,
it has to be cinematic, and like you say, it does feel like it may not be absolutely realistic, but it feels realistic.
Yeah, fair.
And that's like, the important bit.
If the author knows about it from his own experience, that's fair, but he wasn't on every U-boat. And you have to appreciate, you're conveying a movie. I mean, the guy wrote it saying, basically, supposedly that war is terrible. And I think part of his thing was he thought it might be a bit of propaganda for war, like the idea of hero Nazis. And it's like, no, it conveyed that
really not.
War is terrible. It wasn't like a glory of the German soldiers thing. It was like the brutalness of war. It was definitely, I feel, a good adaptation. Even, and it's weird that the author wouldn't like it because, you know, maybe it's just people don't like having their work altered. And that's, I understand that.
Yeah, that's a general kind of thing with writers. If they don't have experience with movies, like they get very precious about their work being changed.
Yeah,
and I really don't see why. I don't think his kind of criticisms are that founded personally.
Yeah, I mean, like just because it emotionally works and narratively works, it doesn't matter if perhaps German soldiers would be more strict or something, or if it was like maybe the U-boatsmen were more emotionally like you know, maybe they weren't as, maybe it wasn't accurate in some ways, but it doesn't matter because it feels so human and we're all human, yeah. So we can relate to it, you know.
Like, there was so much tension. If they didn't release the emotions when it was over, it wouldn't be right. You have to do that in a film, if you know what I mean.
If anything, portraying the Nazis as emotionless robots is kind of suggesting they were these supermen who didn't care or feel. Part of the point of the film is to say, look, the Germans were the baddies, but they weren't bad people, all of them. So I don't know, like, but this is just, you know, basically Wikipedia of the opinion of a man who wrote a book. Like, we don't know, we don't want to start a fight with this guy. He wrote a good book, presumably. We're all of the opinion it was a good adaptation, if the book was good to begin with, I suppose. Once again, we're speculating about a book instead of reading it. I apologise, listeners. We're not a book review thing. We're a book speculation podcast with film reviews thrown in for free. Because we covered the end and we covered the start, are there other moments we've glossed over without reference, or can we get to the point now? I feel like it's weird because this is potentially a 4-hour film and we're racing through talking about it. So there must have been little things like eating moldy food and being hungry and bits of tent, but you know, any bits we want to bring up now before we come to a metaphor conclusion thing?
It's not really stuff that you can explain. It's just stuff, but like, it's the silences and the waiting that brings so much richness to this, but that's not something you could talk about. It's just something you experience and go, please stop, please do something. Oh, you.
Such... Yeah, I can't imagine watching another 2 hours of this film because I just like have a heart attack through all of the tension.
Yeah, I think you do grow a beard and sweat as much as they do if you watch the 4-hour movie. The acting though, every single character, it's so easy to forget you're watching a film. They feel so believable and real. I think, you know, partly it's, you know, makeup, you know, and sort of like spraying a bit of the fake sweat, but the acting, you totally buy that every single character is feeling and thinking what the characters are going through, and you forget, or I found myself completely lost in the film, you know. I felt like I was there, which is so rare. So it's so easy to be cynical and forget that, and it's so easy to realize, oh, these are just actors doing lines, you know, like, but I was absorbed.
So much of that is attributable to it being a whole set.
Yes.
So the actors would be
feeling it,
like completely keyed into what they're doing. And at no point do we think this looks like a set. We just think we're inside a submarine and it's horrible.
Yeah. And also the director not letting them do a bad job. He, you know, if they either were good to begin with, or he just made sure they were all acting all the time. Like, because sometimes it's just like, say Red October, the background characters in that felt like they were just there filling up the scene, whereas every person in this is adding a texture to the visual, if not key to the drama. Well, you know, I think you have to give credit to everyone involved. You can't say it was all on this one person. But it's like, it's like one of those films that's just, where are the problems? Like, I cannot... We're really clutching at straws to find bad things. And all the time you find, I love the character when he does this, or this one does that, and just the little moment between these two, the funny one line here, the things the captain goes through a lot of story arc. You know, we get a good sense of who he is based on how he treats his men, how he treats the severity of the moments. You know, whether he's... Because he's light-hearted at times, but still, you know, business comes first. Proud, but not arrogant. He's really walks an interesting line throughout. Okay, well, another character that... It's hard to know what to say, but another important role is this journalist. I feel like we haven't said enough about him.
That's because he doesn't do much. He is our vehicle to observe through. Those are the wrong words, but my point is correct. Where he is passive, and he helps us to see their world through his eyes.
Because he's a newcomer, isn't he? He's the fresh face. Let's have find out what it is like to be on a U-boat during war. Mm. And his descent and realization is the same speed as ours. You're right, he's an avatar for us. He has no character, apart from a beard, a very pale complexion, and a look of, like sometimes he does seem like he's happy to have camaraderie, but a lot of the time it's like, oh, I'm glad I don't have any of the responsibility of sorting this shit out, because I think we're going to die.
Yeah, he does remain a kind of outsider for a while. It is kind of odd seeing him in the moments where people are doing anything, and all he can really do is kind of observe and stand there.
Yeah, he has to be out of the way, but also, like, the submarine is sinking, they're stuck at the bottom of the sea, I can help the man with a grazed knee feel better. I can pat someone on the back or hold a bucket, but...
Well, I can guy about his fiancée.
I thought he helped Johan. Like, he really wanted to try and help.
He does muck in.
So he helped Johan.
Yeah. But there is that look on his face often of, I don't know what to do, and we might...
Yeah.
Which is how it would be, I guess. I mean, I think he's...
There is that really odd moment where, like, I think they're... Are they in the middle of, like, a battle or, like, fleeing from someone, and then he just kind of goes off and falls asleep somewhere?
Just can't cope.
Mm.
There's a lot of that. There's a lot of storytelling about sleep as well, because they're sleep-deprived in many ways, because it's tiring. But they also... there's many moments of they're asleep after a crisis or sleep because they're running out of oxygen. Like, there's a bit where they're running out low on oxygen, but they still have to work. Like, certain key people, like the beardy, well, they're all bloody beardy, the captain's second-in-command guy is busy doing the engine shit, but everyone else can't do anything because they've stopped the flooding, and they've bucketed loads of water. There's nothing they can do, so they all just lie down with oxygen masks on, hoping they're not going to die in the next 15 hours, you know what I mean? So...
Reminded me of one possible flaw with the film that I want to bring up now, because we've been having a difficult time finding anything. Hmm. Some of the editing was a bit weird, and I'm speculating here. I don't know if it's because... I'm not quite sure, because there's a lot of different versions, so I don't know what the intent of... like the original version was. This is the original kind of theatrical version, the 2.5 hour one that we watched. Mm. But I don't know if there was some sort of problems with cutting down some of the stuff and kind of transitioning between scenes, because it did seem like a lot of the transitions were through someone falls asleep and then wakes up and then just something new is happening.
I guess that's also how it would happen. If you fell asleep on a submarine, you'd wake up and, oh, what's the problem now? You're woken up by the next problem. Or someone whispering to you to move because you're on their friend or lunch.
Like, I wasn't particularly distracted by it or anything. I just was aware of it a couple of times. And, like, I'm just wondering if it's because something big had been cut out or not. I don't know. Yeah. Like, I'm clutching a straw. Like.
We've nitpicked one single nit, and it may or may not be a nit. It could just be dandruff. We don't know. Like, well, you know, it is.
Yeah, but It wasn't a problem, really.
Yeah, but like I say, it's a film about war and sleeping on top of each other and sleeping in against engines. Like, I like the bits where they've worked on the engine, they got it working again, they're really thrilled, and then they have to sleep on it, and you can actually sleep because you're so tired. The vibrating engine is almost comfort to your head, because even though it's painful to like sleep on a vibrating surface, you know, you have to, and it means you're going to live. So it must be very comforting in a way. And Abby, I know we've slept on the floor of a boat, an actual ferry, and it's quite hard to get to sleep on a vibrating surface, isn't it?
I don't think I did. Because I have enough trouble sleeping anyway. You managed it, I think, but it actually had that same flavour. You were more sparse across the floor, but you were just this little sea of people all sleeping on the floor. And yeah. You look like a bear when you do it, so that was extra kind of like, oh.
Yeah, you got more space on a ferry when everyone... But because the seats are... Like, you can't really sleep in a seat for very long if you've got an overnight ferry. And it just... The bar... Like, the bar ferry just became an area where everyone decided to just chairs and floor. And it just... It's a weird way where you all strangers communally decide to sleep together separately across the ground. But yeah, it is, like, I can testify, vibrating surfaces on water, not the most fun to sleep on. But when you're fucked and a... going to survive, I can totally understand it. But I don't know, it was just sleep was a thing, food was a thing, and then sweating and beards was a thing. But it's so much more than just the sum of its parts. It's really it's a positive slog that gives you a good sense of what it must have been like, I presume. Still haven't been to war in a submarine, so I don't know. Could be easy. Could be a fucking walk, strolling the dog, couldn't it? That's not a phrase. That's my German phrase book.
I'll take it.
So I think we can reach a point where we can come up with our final thoughts and metaphor to send us off along the English Channel, or just the bloody end of the podcast, whatever. I was trying to think of a clever way to make an analogy for submarines, and I was just like, I don't know. Let's just do our bit at the end of every podcast where we think a metaphor. For
I have film. Mine already.
Oh. Go on.
It's when we went to visit Orkney, we went to a place called Maes Howe, which is this little building. I think it was technically a fort, but it's just really small, like a little round stone building.
This is in the north of Scotland, in a little island called Orkney. That's what you. I know you said Orkney, but people might not know where Orkney is.
And because it's, I'll go prehistoric for the sake of shortness. It meant there was this tiny little door, and you had to go through like a little sort of tunnel type thing get to the inside, which was still a small room because everyone was smaller back then. So, sort of physically, I think of that because of that small entry, and it's very claustrophobic. We came in and it was dark. And then they put the torch up and they showed us all of the rooms and stuff that were inside. And at first, fairly impenetrable because you can't read them or anything like that. And then they started translating them and they were saying stuff like, yeah, we think some people must have got stuck in here because of bad weather and they were just a bit bored. Because this one says, like, Lars is tall, Ingrid is a loose woman. And it was just basically
Lars
graffiti.
The second is much taller, so I can write high up. It's like, you know... It was like proper silly Viking graffiti, wasn't it?
But I really loved it there because it was so human.
Yeah.
And it was just... And it was so endearing in its own way. Where
it didn't matter what time of history you're in, people are the same. And it felt like that small space. Oh, you're right.
Yeah, I accidentally clobbered my headset there. I do apologise. But that's what... This made me think of it because it's a different... Time is a different culture. For me, it's a different gender. But there's just this sort of essence to it that speaks to me. And I physically said that claustrophobia and darkness as well.
It is. I mean, I was on that trip with you. We did crawl through a very small space into this little hundreds of years old temple-y, I don't know. It was like it had been lots of things over the years, but it was essentially a hill with a little tiny hidden HQ in it. And it was just... It was haunting and interesting, and I think this is like that. I think, you know, if anyone wants to pop to Orkney and take a trip of all the historical things, you'll come across it, and you'll be like, oh, it is a lot like Das Boot. Abby and Rich were right. My life is complete. Yeah. That's a good one. I was just going to say it was like a Subway sandwich because they're delicious and awesome and I like them. But yeah, yours is very clever and meaningful. Anthony?
Yeah, I don't know if I could top that. I don't know. What do you say? It's just, it's a kind of seminal submarine film that is just really good and human and I don't know. It's very good. It's a gold bar.
It's a big bratwurst sausage because it's a big. It is. Abby's just brought it up right at the end there, but it was a bit of a sausage fest. It's all men all the time. You get one woman, she's practically chased off the stage of the cabaret, and it's just like fucking men. You must have loved it, Anthony. Yeah, loved a bit of men action. All men crammed together, sweating. Love it. Of course, you loved it. Sorry, you were trying to say basically. It's good. What the hell can you say? It's gold bar. It's great. Yeah?
Yeah, pretty much.
It's Nazi gold.
How about like a Renaissance painting?
Oh, yeah. Is that it?
I don't know. It's very good.
But it's... Wow. I think Renaissance is the right era for it, where it's very good, but there are one or two things about it where you're like, why are you naked in a chair? So there's just one or two tiny things about it that do make you go.
There's a lot of things about Renaissance era painting and sculpture, and the truth of it is, if things are weird, it's because people were only meant to paint religious stuff, but they didn't want to because they'd done it a million times. There's only so many times you can draw Jesus or Mary. You want to tell the audience something else with the same fucking thing that you can get commissioned to do by popes and rich people. So that's why some Renaissance stuff is really odd. But maybe it's like this. They were trying to say something modern about something old, I think. Like, it was a piece about war from not the period it was set in. Because you had to be patriotic or... When all war films during the war and a little bit after had to be, you know, cheering on your own side. Because that's people... Yeah. That's what got them through.
It is interesting, actually. I don't think we know enough about it to talk about it. But they would have been making this during the Cold War, where the new enemy had become Russia. Yeah. And suddenly Germany wasn't the guy anymore.
So maybe
they were split in half.
Yeah, maybe they were trying to say something about the Cold War. But it is very much a piece of, you know, it's a good way to explain war's terrible. And this is why, and this is what it was like, perhaps. So, you know, kudos. It did that, at least. And it entertains. I think it is a genuinely intriguing, interesting film. A metaphor won't suffice, but Abby's was probably the best there, I think, you know.
Yes, it was very good.
Better than a sandwich or a gold bar or whatever.
It was a story and a metaphor. It was very good, Abby.
And for me, it was a memory of a lovely holiday, learning about how naughty Vikings were. Bloody. They didn't just rape and pillage, they did comical graffiti when they were bored. Anyway, so that brings us to the end of our, not actually one of our lesser slogs, because it was quite an easy podcast, but we should be feeling a little bit sweaty and ready to go ashore, so we'll leave our listeners out the confined space with us and to go breathe in the air before being killed inappropriately on a dock. Bye, listener.
Sorry, guys.
Sorry, you're going to die.
Bye.
Sort of.
Auf Wiedersehen.
Wow, well done.
Guten Tag.
Yeah, very good. But goodbye.